Dan and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Senior Bowl is underway as Floyd was watching practice with a Hawkeye on the TV watching the pass rushers go against the offensive linemen.
Old habits never die.
Did you find any offensive linemen you really liked?
Oh, I don't know. It's too early. There'll be a lot of snaps between now and the game.
When do you decide that you start liking guys? When does the moment, like, you loved Marcus Davenport after the Senior Bowl last year. When did you fall in love with Marcus Davenport?
I don't, you know, generally speaking, with a defensive guy, there's some athleticism involved that kind of catches your eye. You know, tall, really fast, really supple, really, you know, athletic, whatever it may be.
Supple. Okay.
What, you don't like that word?
Well, I just don't hear Mel Kiper Jr. ever say. Well, Trey, one of the big things is, I was going to say his, you know, is very supple. He's very supple.
A guy that can move easily. And I
is
think
that means?
No, it actually, I think, means soft.
Yeah,
something,
that's what
doesn't
I,
it?
You know, something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. It's,
flexible. Flexible. It's also in there.
There
yeah.
we go. That's the word.
Supple.
And I think you see that, and then it goes from there. You know, you start, it catches your eye. You go, ooh, look at that. And then pretty soon you watch him, and he does something else. And then at the point in time, you go, wow, I kind of like this kid.
Okay, so time for the Titans draft needs. I start with this question for you. How hard is it to decide what the draft needs are right now? Because we don't know what they're going to do in free agency.
Yeah.
For example, I think the Titans need a pass rusher. Well, if the Titans signed Dee Ford from the Kansas City Chiefs for $98 million, then they're probably not going to go and get a pass rusher in the first round. But we don't know that yet. So how would you, if you were GM of the Titans, start deciding, okay, what's a draft need and what's a free agency need?
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, those things determine themselves. Okay, so you go into, because free agency is a whole lot sooner, you go into free agency and you say, okay, we need pass rushers. We actually need a couple. So where does it start? Well, you go to free agency, you look out there and see who's available. And if there is a significant group available that are probably going to be in your price range, then you know you can take care of one or both of those there. And I think you go through free agency, set yourself up that way. After free agency, then you go back and look at the draft and say, okay, here's where the draft is really strong. And you go back and let's say receivers are really strong. Then, you know, you feel confident in the fact that you can get a receiver out of this year's draft. And it's a mix and match between the two. And it goes back and forth, back and forth. You'll go into free agency really confident you can land a guy because of his agent or because of the money you know you're going to offer him or whatever the case may be. And then he's franchised. So you don't get shot there. So now all of a sudden, that puts more pressure on the other guys in free agency or on the draft.
Okay, number two. The Arthur Smith hire means what for scouting purposes?
For scouting purposes?
Mm-hmm. So, like, if you hired Jerry Glanville to run the run and shoot, you would have to look at all different players. If you hired a guy who wants to go 21 personnel and run the ball up the middle every play, you'd probably have to go different type of players. Just because you keep it, you know, with the continuity, what does that mean with a guy like Arthur Smith going to be your offensive coordinator?
Yeah, I'm going to guess it wouldn't mean a great deal. You know, I think between Vrabel and J-Rob, they're going to look at, you know, who's available and we'll go from there. I mean, their needs and what they feel like they're going to need to improve this team next year, I think we'll probably take precedent over everything else simply because, you know, there's not going to be a lot of wholesale changes.
Okay, now let's go right to your needs. What do you think the needs are for the Titans?
Let's start rush.
Let's start defensive side of the ball with the most important stuff.
Pass rush.
Okay, and how many of those guys?
A couple, anyway. I mean, you're going to need a couple. The most effective pass rush you get is from the inside guys, and you would like to think that Casey would be that guy. But I think part of the problem is, other than Casey, I mean, there's really nobody inside that can do much for you.
Jones?
Doesn't do much, you know. I mean, he'd bang around. I mean, he's an okay guy, but he's not going to be in there in third down, you know, if you're trying to get to the quarterback. So I would like to have one of those, but you definitely need some outside guys. Now, you would like to think Landry is going to be one of those guys, and he very well can be. So you say, all right, we need another one or two of those guys. And then, you know, if you can get that just pass rush, I would even go with an undersized, kind of like Casey, mm-hmm. undersized inside pass rusher that, you know, Klug used to be and Casey used to be. And, you know, we had some guys that kind of fit that menu there for a while.
Why? Because you can get that in the fourth round as opposed to the first round?
You don't need a big, giant. You know, most guys want, if you're going to draft a pass rusher in the first round, he's going to be a guy that's going to play every snap, you know.
Okay, so right now, outside linebacker, the Titans, in my opinion, have Harold Landry and Sharif Finch and Kamale Correa as their outside pass rushers. Got to upgrade that. And then you want to upgrade the defensive line where there's Casey and Jones and Johnson and all of those guys.
It's time. I mean, it's been a while, and I mean, I think we're going to be adequate inside linebacker. We're going to be adequate in the secondary. I mean, from a defensive standpoint, I don't know. You know, I mean, that's the area in my mind that if you're going to do any kind of overhaul, it'll be there.
Okay, let's then flip to the offensive side of the ball because you think they're good in secondary, good at inside linebacker, which I would agree with. Brown, Woodyard, Evans, they're fine. The three corners, the two safeties. I think they'll bring Vaccaro back. I think they'll cut Cyprian. Although Vaccaro's probably going to want more money and a longer deal, I would still bring Vaccaro back and cut Cyprian because I think Vaccaro is better.
Yeah, he fit better.
Offensive side of the ball, what do they need?
They got to do something with the offensive line, the interior guys. And I'm going to guess they'll want to do something at tight end and receiver.
So why do they need to do something at tight end? Because to me, you've got Delanie Walker as your number one, Jonnu Smith, who was a third-round pick, who was starting to come into his own at the end of the year. Jonnu Smith is your number two. Then your third can be Firkser, Stocker, or Pruitt, and your fourth can be another one of those guys. That, I mean, they could legitimately carry five tight ends. Yeah, Pruitt played well when he had to be called upon. Firkser obviously played well. Why would you draft a tight end?
I mean, you're comparing those guys to Jonnu Smith or something. I mean, I'm talking about as a tight end, you know, somebody's going to go out and catch 70, 80 balls.
Well, I have Delanie Walker to do that.
Well, yeah, but we don't even know if Delaney's going to be back.
Yeah, he's going to be back.
We don't have any idea what he's going to be.
He broke his ankle. He'll be fine.
He's 34, and he tore his ankle up. We have no idea what he's going to be coming back.
So I'm going to use the 19th pick in the draft on a tight end?
I didn't say that. You asked me what we wanted.
No, Mel Kiper said that, though.
We need a tight end.
Okay, wide receiver. Every year the Titans need a wide receiver. Every year they draft a wide receiver. And then the next year they need a wide receiver. They drafted contract Kendall Wright in the first round. They drafted Justin Hunter in the second round. They drafted DGB in the second round. They drafted Corey Davis in the first round. They drafted Taywan Taylor in the third round. And every year they need more wide receivers. So where do they find these wide receivers so that they don't have to keep looking for wide receivers?
Yeah, good question.
And what about the guys who have been drafted? Why can't they play wide receiver?
They need to go ahead and, I mean, whether it's in free agency or the draft. I just assume. Here's what, and I know you don't appreciate this about LaFleur and the offense last year. Our receivers last year caught a little over 300 passes. The top four receivers of that group did not play this year. That was over 220 passes. So remaining on this roster for LaFleur and the offensive this year were 80 catches. 80 catches. I mean, when you've got receivers that are going out and catching 100 balls, 80 for your entire group is not very impressive. So, I mean, they need work.
Who's the fourth? Walker, Matthews, Decker. Who's the fourth?
Murray.
Oh, whatever. I mean,
What does that mean?
They got rid of him. They brought in Deion Lewis.
It doesn't matter. It still counts.
Deion Lewis can catch a ball.
You still need him. All of those guys were gone.
Yes, and they brought in guys to replace
now,
some of them.
And you replace them with Deion Lewis. How much, you know, he was a backup. And then who else?
Well, Matt LaFleur was so smart, he was using Deion Lewis as the starter for most of them.
Are the guys that are trying to work their way into the routine from draft choices. So,
how about instead of going out and drafting more wide receivers, how about the wide receivers they draft start playing better?
I would be, well, I mean, I would take all of that.
Like Davis and Taylor. Sharp, I mean, you know what? I'm getting to the Colin Wilson stage with Tajay Sharp.
You don't need, I mean, all of those guys are what they are.
Not Davis.
They are what they are. No, I'm talking about Sharp.
Oh, okay.
Sharp is what he is.
Just like Colin Wilson was what he was.
He's
going to
go out there and he's going to bang around. And, you know, at the end of the year, he's going to catch 30 passes and end up getting hurt. So, you know what? I mean, we need to be better than that. For us to compete where we want to compete, we need to be better than all those guys.
So that's what Floyd's got as his draft needs. Two pass rushers, a defensive lineman that can rush the passer, needs to fix the interior offensive line. Now, I'm not sure exactly what you mean by that, but tight end and wide receiver. Let's take your phones on it. 615-737-1025 is the phone number, 615-737-1025. I want to jump in on your thoughts on the offensive line. And then, can the Javon curse effect happen this year? Because part of me is kind of praying for that. We're live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. and Mount Juliet. Jared and Floyd, Jared the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Involved any differently in the draft evaluation process just since you've been here a year and you're in a different place than you were a year ago?
No, I felt like my draft involvement was good. I mean, John and I talk about stuff all the time. You know, we talk about players on our roster, players on other teams' rosters, or players in the draft.
Too good. Too good. Vrabel, I think I was fine last year. Vrabel at the Senior Bowl right now. Floyd's needs for the draft. Two pass rushers, a pass rushing defensive end, inside interior offensive line, tight end, and wide receiver. When you say interior of the offensive line, what does that mean? Does that mean two guards? Does that mean a center? Are you ready to get rid of Jones? I mean, what do you make of them?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the bottom line is that those guys, generally speaking, those guys are interchangeable. And so I would figure out who the best, you know, one, two, or however many, and you know, guys that you're going to want to keep and put them in their best spot and then go get some more. But you may go someplace, you may go into free agency and find a center there that is, and you bring him in to be a center and realize he's not as good as Ben Jones. So then you say, okay, you know, I've got to move him to guard, and then all of a sudden I can't play guard. So then you move Ben to guard and slide him back in as the center. You know, I mean, those guys are all, you know, will move around pretty easily.
So which guys would you keep and which guys would you get rid of? Spain is a free agent this year. I'm going to guess they let Spain go finally.
I don't know. I mean, he's, you know, he kind of was on the hot seat, you know, midway through the year or whatever it was, and then came back and actually played pretty good. But it seems like they, you know, every year they've got to do something to motivate him a little bit, and that becomes a problem in my world.
Okay, Klein, everybody rips on him. Do you keep Klein?
I don't know. You know, it's the same deal. You're talking about people rip on him because of the money.
Where's your salary cap chart that you had the other day out here?
I took it home.
Okay, well, bring it back tomorrow. Because you were kind of X-ing out through some guys, and I'm wondering if any of these guys
That was a nice little chart, too. It might be over there someplace. But anyway.
I see how much you care about it.
You know, those guys, I mean, I think you're going to move those guys around, find somebody that fits. Go with it.
And you'd keep Jones or let him go?
Same deal. I mean, however it works out. I don't know how they rate those guys, you know, and it's hard to rate them unless you study them because so much of the time they're so covered up you don't ever see them. I mean, they're like non-existent down there.
Let's go to your phone. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. John is up next on the Titans wide receiver need. Thank you for calling. What's up, John?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
So, I mean, I know it's not really a proven thing yet, but, I mean, I'm total agreeance with you guys about going out and getting wide receivers every single year. And we never go out and get, you know, a prime number one wide receiver. It's always taking a risk on somebody like Nate Washington or something like that. Why not go out and go after Antonio Brown, solve the problem of wide receiver, because then we know we have a prime number one, and then we have Corey Davis on the other side. So then we know if Marcus Mariota can actually throw the ball or if we can actually call plays. Take that out of the equation and get somebody solid that there's no gambling on.
I like the idea of getting somebody solid. I mean, I'm all for that. You know, a number one receiver, if you will.
There's a number one receiver to be had right now.
As far as Antonio Brown, I think that's probably where you have to start questioning what's going on. You know, if in fact you want him part of... I mean, there's his skill, there's no doubt. I mean, he's one of the premier receivers. It's everything else you have to worry about.
Is your locker room and your coach strong enough to contain Antonio Brown? That's the question. Is your locker room and coach strong enough to contain Antonio Brown?
Yeah,
Bill Belichick was strong enough to contain Randy Moss for a little bit. Now, remember that eventually even Moss kind of got fed up, and they got fed up with Moss, and...
But I don't think that ever really happened.
Well, you would know that better than I would because you were actually there.
Yeah, we were there. I mean, Randy was always a giant plus. I mean, I was, and I think everybody else was a little bit shocked at how pleasant he was. Now it's, you know, he's got a little street to him, you know, a little, especially when it comes to talk, but. I mean, you talk about a good teammate and a good guy and a funny guy. I mean, he is hilarious to be around. So, I mean, for example, Randy right now, you know, if he was out there and we, I mean, I would have no problem signing Randy.
But Randy had the same rap about him at this point as Brown does. You know, Randy had the I play when I want to play quote. He had the marijuana in the car and the cop. He had all the stuff in the past. Randy had a lot of question marks at Oakland before he went to New England. Brown has a lot of question marks as well. I mean, he doesn't really have a lot of question marks. He has one question mark. Is Antonio Brown going to come in here and light the league up, or is Antonio Brown going to come in here and ruin the team?
Yeah. I mean, that's
And
the,
I
that's
would generally
question.
Say that I'm against that, and I would be anti-Antonio Brown, and I still think I probably am anti-Antonio Brown, but I will say this. It's hard to get better when you're 9-7 if you don't take risks. You know, at some point, you got to take a risk. And you may not, there may be a part of you that says, Jared, you know, are you sure you want to take that risk? And you think, yeah, but this one guy could take me from 9-7 to 11-5. And Brown is good enough to take you from 9-7 to 11-5. So is it worth the risk? Is it worth the fact that, you know, you got the Saints coming in here, and if you're going to beat them next year, you better score some points. I think that I think it's at least worth considering. And I know you are like the most risk-averse person I've ever met. Like, I don't know what your portfolio says, but I'm going to guess it's all in like the S&P 500 and not so
well,
much.
No,
the
I mean, I think there's risky a, tech there, there is a risk reward, you know, equation you have to go through in your mind. But in my mind, this is not one of those.
You don't, but your coach is stronger than Tomlin.
I'm not worried about my coach. I'm worried about the locker room. And you have to be worried about the coach. I mean, this is you've seen what he did at Pittsburgh with that coach, with that quarterback, with all of those veteran all-pro players in the locker room, how he reacted. I mean, there was no intimidation, no fret, no worry. No, you think he's going to be concerned coming in here? I mean, he ain't going to be worried about any of that. He's going to come in and do pretty much what he wants.
At some point, you're going to have to take a risk. And I don't know when that's going to be, but you didn't take too many risks when you were Titans GM, and maybe had you taken a little risk on Randy Moss, you would have got that 1 yard you needed in the Super Bowl, and that would be the difference. And I'm not saying Antonio Brown's the risk I want to take. I'm just saying there is a time where it's time to take some risks. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. More of your calls. Plus, does the offensive coordinator hire signal to us that the Titans are high on Marcus? I will explain. That's next on Jared and the GM. It's ESPN 1025, the game.
Arthur Smith is ready for this. I mean, I have no doubt because I have worked with him. I've seen him. I've sat in the same room with him, game planning. And then I've watched him grow as a coach. I've got no doubt this is a good move.
That was Dave McGinnis on the Titans podcast. He thinks Arthur Smith, the OC, is a good move. Floyd thinks it's a good move, too. Although, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. If Floyd thought it was a bad move, would Floyd tell us that it was a bad move to hire Arthur Smith as OC?
Sure.
Like, if the Titans named Doug Marrone the next head coach of the Titans, or Rex Ryan the next head coach of the Titans, would you come out against Rex Ryan being the next head coach of the Titans?
I don't think we have to worry about that one. So, I mean, that ain't going to happen.
I'm just saying if it did. Breaking news, by the way, Mariano Rivera, the first ever baseball player elected unanimously to the Baseball Hall of Fame, which that's a whole can of worms to get into. Edgar Martinez, Roy Halladay, and Mike Mussina are the electees to the Hall of Fame. So there's that. Okay, so I have a theory that on Mariota, the reason that they're sticking with the continuity of Arthur Smith is not because they want to make it easier on Mariota, although there's a point to that, but it's because I think they believe in Mariota. Like, I really think John Robinson thinks Mariota can be a franchise quarterback, even to this day, even though the fans are down on him, even though I'm kind of down on him because he can never stay healthy, and I think John is worried to death that he's going to miss out on this franchise quarterback because the franchise quarterback can't stay healthy. But I believe that he thinks Mariota's a franchise quarterback, and he thinks Arthur Smith, with some continuity, will give him the best chance to be a franchise quarterback. Is that a crazy thought at this stage that John Robinson could still believe in Mariota that much after what we've seen?
Well, no. I mean, it's not crazy. I mean, I think, you know, I think he's like the rest of us. I mean, he's kind of holding his breath and waiting. I think that, I mean, I think the thing with Arthur, and again, you know, here's the debate. You say, okay, we were going to go out and we were going to get the quarterback coach with Cincinnati. Well, there's no difference between Arthur and the quarterback coach at Cincinnati. Well, we were going to go get the receiver coach at Miami. Well, there's no difference between Arthur and they. And I think that's the point. The point, you start looking around at what's available, what you can get, what you want, and you say to yourself, well, you know what? That's no different than the guy that's sitting right here. And we know everything there is to know about him, and he knows everything there is to know about us. So let's go ahead and do that. Now, what does that do? I think that puts the hat squarely on Mariota. I mean, Mariota now, you know, he knows everybody involved. He knows everything about it. There won't be anything that Arthur brings up that Marcus won't have heard or been around or understood or whatever the case may be. So it's, I mean, I think it's it's up to him to go ahead and perform.
Let's go to the phones. Jason is up next on the Titans draft. Thank you for calling. What's up, Jason?
Hey, guys. Jared, GM. Thanks for taking the call. Look, yep. I mean, one receiver, even if it's Antonio Brown, look, I've been a Steelers fan all my life. It isn't going to make the changes that we need. If Mariota's being sacked time and time again, from pressure being straight up the gut. I mean, we both know, well, all three of us know, the fastest path from point A to B is a straight line, and that's where we're deficient. We need to solve the interior offensive line and get some defensive pass rush. And if you do this, that then has a ripple effect among the teams. You get Mariota more time, then the receivers that we have might look a little bit better because he has an opportunity to throw. And I'm not a Mariota fan right now. I'm just saying that's the ripple effect that I'm looking for. Putting one guy on the outside doesn't change the whole concept of the offensive playbook, even if it's Antonio Brown. If the offensive line is still as awful in the center as it has been, and we still don't know if his elbow is going to be healthy enough and strong enough to be able to make the outside throws outside the numbers anyway, so we're all holding our breath on that part. So I say go interior line, go defensive pass rush. Both of those things help the overall team, because then your secondary is going to get better because they don't have to cover as long, and Mariota's going to have more time to throw the ball outside the numbers when he needs to get that big first down play when we're looking at third and long.
Thank you, Jason. The best year Mariota had was the best year the offensive line's had since he's been here.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't disagree with anything that caller said, and I think – you know, probably most people would agree. I mean, it's going to start with protecting Marcus, and you're right. The best year Marcus ever had was when the mandate was protect Marcus, and we did that, and then you know, got away from it a little bit. But I think you know, Arthur has seen all this, been through all this. I'm going to guess, especially being a tight end coach, that he's going to understand all of the issues with pass protection and who needs to be where to be able to pick guys up, because that's what he's, you know, made his living on for the last X number of years.
I just wish the Titans could coach up some of the guys they have. I don't think the offensive line coach is very good. I mean, I think we need to analyze that, too. The Patriots have a bunch of random guys on their offensive line, but they've got Dante Scarnecchia, so when the game matters against the Chiefs, who have great pass rushers, they give Brady enough time to make it work. Why can't the Titans do that?
Well, I mean, that's part of it. The other part of it with Brady is the ball's out of his hand in about 2 seconds. I mean, there is no – you don't see him dancing around back there. I mean, he gets the ball, it's gone. I mean, he's almost, you know, that's why you say you could almost come completely free against Tom. And, in fact, we saw it the other night in the game, and he still get rid of the ball.
When the guy came free off the edge and he didn't even see it, but he knew the guy was coming, so he threw it away.
Yeah, I mean, he knows what's going on, and I think he has a feel for that. And I think, you know, it's even if you, like I said, even if nobody blocks you, chances of you getting there, you know, 50-50. So I think that's completely different probably with us.
So is the problem with the line, is it the offensive line coach? Is it the offensive coordinating and the fact that maybe Mariota was holding onto the ball too much? Was it Mariota's fault? Because as you said, Brady doesn't have a problem with that. I mean, I think that those are all questions that have to be answered before we start saying, all right, get three new guys in here on the interior offensive line and that'll change everything. I mean, I'm a little cautious to say that, you know, that's going to be the cure-all for everything.
Right. I mean, there's going to be – I mean, blitz pickup is should be the number one, in my opinion. This is an old defensive coach, but should be the number one concern for every offensive coach out there. I don't care who your team is. I don't care what – I mean, if you can't pick up the blitz, if you can't protect your quarterback, then I don't care who he is. He's going to have a tough time now.
Like if the Patriots get to golf – they'll win. You know, like when you get to the Super Bowl, if they get to golf and they do what they did to Mahomes to golf, they'll win.
Yeah. I think if the Patriots can't block Sue and Darnold, then they'll win. And that's gonna be their biggest challenge of the night.
So Mariano Rivera elected first ballot unanimously, 100% to the Hall of Fame. And I just have one little bugaboo about that. And not that, I know baseball is not what it used to be and all of that. But, like, is Mariano Rivera really that much better than, say, Randy Johnson or Ken Griffey Jr.? Or these guys, like, Ken Griffey Jr. could do everything out on the baseball field, and he didn't get in unanimously? Or Hank Aaron didn't get in unanimously? How did Hank Aaron not get into the Hall of Fame unanimously? Like, what did Hank Aaron do wrong? But Mariano's the first guy who gets in unanimously? Like, I don't get it.
I don't know. You're asking the wrong guy. I don't know how that Hall of Fame stuff, works in baseball.
Well, they got 200 writers, and they're the ones that vote on it, and they're the ones that put people in the Hall of Fame or take them out or things like that. And the problem with the baseball writers is the baseball writers, really are the stereotype of a sports writer. They really are kind of like the older guys who are kind of curmudgeon-y, who, kind of don't like to be bothered too much, very get off my lawn, that kind of thing. And so they always have something that they don't like about somebody, and they're, I want to show them, all right, how are baseball, how are... And they actually kind of turn people away from baseball, which I think they need to get better at. And I think baseball's got a boatload of problems that, quite frankly, I'm not sure anybody really cares to discuss right now. But, like, when he's the first unanimous Hall of Famer, it's like you're saying that he's more of a Hall of Famer than Randy Johnson was. And Randy Johnson was the definition of a Hall of Famer. Ken Griffey Jr. was the definition of all of it. Like, Derek Jeter, I think, comes up next year. Derek Jeter should be unanimous to the Hall of Fame, right?
Well, I think all of those things...
How could you vote against Derek Jeter?
All of those things are determined by who else is out there. Who are they competing against? And I think that's true in any of these Hall of Fame. That's why, like, in the NFL, you get some great player... T.O., whoever it is, whatever name you want to throw out there that doesn't get in for a while, it's not because he's not a great player. It's because they've already got a receiver or two going in this class, and, you've got to wait for the next one. And I think that happens in all these Hall of Fames, and particularly in baseball. First time it's unanimous, it's probably, who else was he running against? And because... it was obvious he was the best out there, then, sure, vote for him.
You don't care at all about the Hall of Fame. You're what's wrong with baseball, Floyd.
I'm not into baseball that much.
I think nowadays, to like baseball, you have to have a team. And then you can care about your team, but then not give a rip about really anything else. Like, that's what I think it is like with hockey. I mean, I like watching hockey, but who's on tonight? Who cares? But the Predators, we watch every Preds game and, get mad at this guy or mad at that guy. And then it's like, I kind of feel like the people in the town know the other teams better when you play them in the playoffs. Like, we know everybody on Winnipeg now, and we know everybody on Colorado. But, like, how much do we know, Jared and Floyd, about the Edmonton Oilers? We know Connor McDavid's really, really good. We know their GM, Peter Chiarelli, trades away a lot of great players. We know that Draisaitl is a stud, and that they can't ever find a goalie, and that Pekka never loses to him. But those are the only things that we know about them. But, like, with the Jets, we know about, like, Brandon Tanev, and Sherratt's out tonight. Sherratt and Byfuglien and Ehlers are out. So what does that mean for them? And
gotta be good.
I think that's him lose 5-1. That's what I think, like, baseball has become now. Like, I'm a huge Atlanta Braves fan. I watch the Braves, like, every night. But if it's, like, ESPN has the Orioles and the Phillies on, like, I don't care. Like, unless the Phillies, are trying to go for a playoff spot the Braves want, then I care. But if not... don't care. But I watch the Braves, like, every night. And I just, that's what I think baseball has become. Okay, coming up next. Were you about to yawn into the microphone?
No, I started to say I can't remember the last time I sat down and watched not just an entire baseball game, but just part of a baseball
game. Like, not even the World Series?
It's very, very seldom. I mean, I can't remember the last time. So it's been a while. My clicker at home on my TV station
doesn't get baseball.
Right past baseball.
Coming up next, why the St. Louis Rams, St. Louis, why the L.A. Rams have proven that the Titans were dumb. Maybe four too. Jared of the GM, it's ESPN 102.5, the game. Jared of the GM, breaking news out of Vanderbilt. Darius Garland, the superstar freshman who played like three games and then got hurt, has written this long essay about yada, yada, yada. It's called My Next Step, and it goes on and on and on. And it basically says that he is withdrawing from Vanderbilt and is going to prepare for the NBA draft. Not a shocker. We knew that when he wasn't going to come back during the season, he wasn't coming back because he was headed to the draft, and that's great. But can I just say something? Like, he tweeted it out, and now Vanderbilt's released it and all of that. Like, Vanderbilt plays the number one team in the country tomorrow, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, like, shouldn't the focus be on getting ready to play the number, like, for the team's sake? Shouldn't the discussion be about getting ready to play the number one team in the country? And not, hey, this guy just decided he's going to leave the program and prepare for the NBA draft. Like, I know that everybody involved with the one and done is selfish on some level, the coaches, the players, and it's not their fault because they can't go to the NBA. But, like, could it not have waited, like, 2 days or 3 days? Like let's say Vandy beats the Vols tomorrow. Then you have a whole day to celebrate. Then do it the next day. And everybody's fine. But the night before they play the number one team in the country? Like, isn't there something wrong with that?
I'm so disappointed. We were so excited about that recruiting class, and they were going to come in, and they were going to light it up, and they were going to—it'd be so much fun. And now you're kind of going, what happened? You didn't get to see what. How many games did he play?
Like three or four.
Yeah, you got to see him play three games. Great career.
And it's like, it's not his fault, and it's not Vandy's fault, and it's the one and done fault. But like the day before you play Tennessee, the biggest game of the year for Vanderbilt, because they're not going to the tournament because they suck and they are garbage, and you're getting ready to play the number one team in the country, and you come out and say, I'm leaving the team to go prepare for the NBA draft. Number one, we all knew you were going to do that anyways. Number two, why did you feel the need to announce it today? And number three, don't you think that's a little selfish to your team? Like, you're says in the thing, I'm a Commodore for life. Well, what are you doing to your team right now? Shouldn't you be on the bench tomorrow supporting the team? Now, I guess you can if you're withdrawing, and maybe he puts it out there now so that when no one sees him out there, it's like, okay, that's why he's not out there on the bench, is because he's not at the school anymore. So that makes sense. But, like, it makes me mad. It makes me mad. It's like nobody at that school has a clue about anything. Like, nobody with any department that has to do with sports. Like, not football. Well, I guess the baseball coach. I don't want to take anything away from him. He knows what he's doing. Baseball coach, yes. Everybody else, athletic director, the new athletic director, men's coach, women's coach, players, like, all of it. That school just does not have a clue. And then this comes out the day before the UT game? Like, how about we let the focus be on playing UT for the one day that you might get to matter? Because if you beat them, then it matters. But if you don't, then it's over. Like, God, it aggravates me because it is so selfish.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the story of the one and done. I mean, if you...
Yeah, like, why do they have to care? You're making them care, sure. So why should they have to care if they don't care?
They don't. That's like, I'd be interested to see how many of those guys actually go to class or go to school or go. I mean, why would you? I wouldn't. You know, sign up, do whatever you have to do to get eligible, and then see ya.
Well, that's like one of the Kentucky PR people tweeted out when I worked in Louisville, about how they had a big win at Georgia that was over at like 10 at night. They got home at like 2 a.m. And Carl Anthony Towns was walking to his 8 a.m. class today because that's what kind of story. Who gives a rat's tail about Carl Anthony Towns going to class. I don't care. My guess is Carl doesn't care. Like, who cares? Like, seriously. And so, yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, and I think that that, more than anything, has hurt the one and done. I mean, it's hurt college basketball.
Sports just doesn't matter anymore. There is no doubt.
But it's just so selfish. Like, could it not wait until after the UT game to announce that you're no longer at the school to prepare for the draft? And also, like, why can't you stay in school and prepare for the draft? Like, now maybe you can't. I don't know. Whatever. Who cares? Now, the one thing. When I was 21 years old, the Titans fired Jeff Fisher. I might have been 22. The Titans fired Jeff Fisher. And I was so excited because, you know, even though I didn't think Jeff Fisher was that bad, now I've been corrected, he is that bad. I was excited that the Titans were going to get a new start and, you know, let's see where this baby goes. Go get a good coach. Go do that. And they make the most uninspiring hire in the history of the NFL, and they hire Mike Munchak. And we all know how that worked out. And I knew that was an uninspiring hire. And I'm like, go get somebody good. Go do something. Go get something exciting. Go light a fire under this team. Do something. And they hired, Mike Munchak, who I felt like was, you know, Jeff Fisher light, although he really wasn't, but that's how I felt. The Rams have proven, by going to the Super Bowl 2 years after a Jeff Fisher disaster, the Rams have proven how dumb the Titans were 6 or 7 years ago by hiring Mike Munchak. The laziest hire of all time, the most uninspiring hire, Mike Munchak. It's like Bud Adams walked down the hallway, "Hey, Jimmy, you want the job? It's yours, baby." And the Titans have been bad ever since and have won one playoff game. And the Rams, 2 years after firing Jeff Fisher, are in the Super Bowl. And I think the Rams being in the Super Bowl is a total reflection that Jeff Fisher stinks. Like, he was crying to Sports Illustrated that he wants another coaching job? No. Like, after the Rams go to the Super Bowl 2 years after you're out of there? No. Jeff Fisher, you are done. You got to go. It's like Shannon Sharp said when Jeff Fisher was still the coach, he's earned the right to stay in L.A., but he hadn't earned the right to be the coach of the Rams. And Snoop Dogg just goes, yeah, he can go strip club. And that's how I feel. And I feel like the great teams that I grew up rooting for as a kid that Floyd Reese put together were robbed from me by poor coaching of Jeff Fisher. And I only have one person to blame for that. And I'm looking right at him. You.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because what you should have done in hindsight is you should have, you know, when the Titans moved into the new stadium and became the Titans, you should have gone with a fresh start there and hired your old buddy from Detroit, William F. Belichick. You should have hired him, and that should have been the new coach of the Titans to bring in the new era with that defense and Steve McNair and Eddie George and Bill Belichick, and you probably wouldn't be doing radio with me today. So I will see you tomorrow, Floyd. Jared and the GM, Tackling Music City's next.